Hump Day, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. It's Wednesday, so this is an archive show, but it last aired 2 to 10 years ago, so unless you're a hardcore, long-time listener, it's probably new to you. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it.
This story was first published on September 1st of 2013 under the headline, Valsett's Newspaper and Its Editor, Age 9, Won Nationwide Fame. Here we go. If you'd taken a nationwide poll in 1939, asking people from outside Oregon to name as many Oregon towns as they could, the top three could very well be Portland, Salem, and Valsett's. Portland because it's the biggest, of course. Salem, because it's the state capital, and Valsett's because of its newspaper, the Valsett's Star, and the Star's editor, 11-year-old Dorothy Ann Hobson. Dorothy Ann was the daughter of Henry and Ruby Hobson, the cookhouse managers for the tiny company town of Valsett's, which was owned by the Cobbs and Mitchell Lumber Company. Her newspaper was handcrafted on a card table, on regular legal-sized sheets of paper, and her printing press was a mimeograph machine in Cobbs and Mitchell's downtown Portland office. From there, each month it went out to a small but influential and always growing list of subscribers, including Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, Herbert Hoover, Wendell Willkie, and Shirley Temple. It was read on the air by countless radio announcers all over the country. It was a sensation. The paper started in the summer of 1937 when Dorothy, then 9 years old, was having lunch in the Valsett's cookhouse with Herbert Templeton, one of the logging company's executives. Quote, "There's going to be a newspaper in Valsett's," she told him firmly, and showed him the first edition sketched out on a school tablet. Quote, "It was at once apparent that the editor was able," Templeton wrote later. "Valsett's surely offered a good and fertile field. Why shouldn't Valsett's have a newspaper?" A deal was promptly consummated whereby our Portland office, splendidly equipped with a $60 mimeograph machine, would print the Valsett's Star. Dorothy Ann chose to dignify us with the title of publishers. Although the Star didn't adhere to AP style, its editor was a stickler for deadlines, or at least she became one. The Star was published faithfully every month with the exception of a couple months early on in its run. Quote, "We didn't have a June issue of the Star. Nellie and I played too much. We hope nobody wants their money back." Right from the start, the paper made a big deal about its political affiliation. Quote, "We believe in hemlock fir, kindness, and Republicans," Dorothy wrote. But she was always careful to add that Democrats were also nice people. She adored President Roosevelt and his wife Eleanor. She just wished they were Republicans, that's all. Quote, "The Republicans are nice and sensible, but the Democrats are lots of fun," she wrote in 1939. "We don't know what to think." The tone of the Valsett's Star right from the start is a sort of hilarious precociousness, the kind of thing that you would expect from a really intelligent 11-year-old. Quote, "Everyone contributed toward the entertainment," she wrote in July 1938, describing a company event. "This is the first time we have used the word contributed, but we will be using bigger words from now on because Mother bought the Book of Knowledge set for us from Mrs. Shea of Portland, and she gave us a big dictionary with the set. We will pay for it later." For a preteen, though, she had a wicked wit, which her parents always seemed to get the worst of, especially her mother, Ruby. Quote, "Mr. Frank Trower in San Francisco said there is a new book out about the logging woods called Holy Old Mackinaw, but it was not a book for ladies to read," she wrote in 1939, April. "Mother sent for it right away." Quote, "Danny is trying to find a place for his vacation this summer where his stomach won't get any bigger," she remarked in the local news column for March 1940. And then there was September 1939, when an attempt by the corset industry to reconquer American fashion met with mixed success in the Hobson home. Quote,
"Mother has some new corsets for a waist like a wasp," Dorothy noted, "but when she laces them up real tight, she faints."
The Star was most known for adorable observations on life in a small backwoods town. Quote,
Things to be thankful for this Thanksgiving Day,
she wrote in the November 1937 paper.
That our living room leaks in one corner instead of all over. That the new truck road didn't slide into the pond. That we have snow in Seattle instead of here.
Quote,
Valsetts is small but very exciting,
she wrote in the July 1939 issue.
One couple got married, one couple got divorced, three men got in a fight, two babies were born, and two men got in jail. Greta Garbo can milk a cow. Weather forecast. Too hot for words.
As time went by, though, the tone of the Valsetts Star underwent a subtle change. As its prose got more professional, it grew a little less carefree. Its editor was growing up. The 1940 election brought with it a torrent of hate mail. The U.S. is a large country, and if only 0.1% of Americans think it's okay to verbally abuse an 11-year-old girl for backing the quote-unquote wrong presidential candidate, that's still a lot of people. In response to them, she penned what has to be, even today, the gold standard for responses to anonymous trolls. Quote,
A few people have written us dreadful letters for supporting Wendell Willkie for president,
she wrote.
But they did not sign their names. Please don't be ashamed of your name. We are not ashamed of ours.
Anonymous sarcasm and other crude abusive feedback was easily sloughed off. But other, subtler, malevolent spirits seemed to have been more successful at stealing young Dorothy Ann's dreams. Probably the most poignant issue of the Valsetts Star came in February 1941, when this celebrated, nationally famous 12-year-old author wrote the following in her monthly special editor's note column. Quote,
After reading several letters written to us, we've decided not to be a lawyer. One man wrote, Women are failures as lawyers. They lack nerve and are too soft. And even one woman wrote from Chicago, Women talk too much, honey. Try something else. Then,
she continued,
from a very smart young man in New York who signed his name with a great dash, Women, huh, they make me sick. Law, that's a laugh. They better look after a man's stomach instead of his lawsuits. We've gotten quite discouraged over all this, and although we can't see anything very interesting about stomachs, we think maybe we had better just keep house.
At the end of that year, Dorothy folded up her newspaper and threw herself into extracurricular activities at her new junior high school in Salem. So far as I've been able to learn, she never published anything again. Key sources in this story have included works by Dorothy Ann Hobson and Linda Carlson.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love, which is in turn a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house that specializes in audiobook and regular book editions of stories from the classic pulp fiction era. Robert E. Howard, Algernon Blackwood, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and so on. More info can be found at pulp-lit.com. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license, type CC by SA International 4.0. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do, or just want to say hi, or maybe you're going to be in Corvallis sometime soon with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way at around 6 a.m. every weekday morning. So if you're looking for the next one, you haven't long to wait. Till then, go fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.